I bring my thoughts with a huge amount of humility and a huge amount of interest in what you're doing.
This is our Finambulist logo. As you can see, Karachi is over there.
How we have for such a long time be so complicit in this planetary ecocide.
Clearly, if it needs to be one group of people to the detriment of every others, it will always be like for the political struggles themselves.
But for some reason, we have decided to disrupt that ecological balance way more than any other species.
Think of ecology in the least technocratic way, the way indigenous nations have been cultivating a certain relationship to their direct environment.
And reflecting on overconsumption and things like that. This could be an interesting thing to look at.
Like, our project is focused around this idea of wonder.
When you say other people or the audience or something like that, who are we talking about?
Graphical, digital stages where these players will be fighting. But
how do you use Street Fighter as a way to engage people on the topic of human and non-human interaction?
Yeah. Imagine, for example, if you played the game by holding leaves of a plant, you know, rather than a joystick.
We are just talking to them about all the species in the mangroves.
Turns out it was a 16-year-old boy who cut the tree away, and it caused a huge nationwide outcry about this vandalism.
Like, what we do is like guerrilla gardening, or we try to like rescue plants.
Or write some book, or why do you not just like do a lecture for people to learn about this? There's a thing about artwork which is powerful. It's on an emotional level.
We exist in design circles in a sector that has morally disengaged from its climate impact.
We've been talking about greenwashing as well as innovation washing. And on top of it, now you have moral disengagement.
Where greenwashing comes up a lot in conversation, but we wouldn't be where we are if people hadn't done a bunch of things that they, you know, are not proud of. For me, innovation washing is slightly different. Forms of tax evasion that come into form as R&D departments that have no intention of turning their R&D work into actual work, you know, and they are performative pieces of work. I think we don't have time anymore for that.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is one of our last guest sessions for this artistic research residency, Reveries of an Urban Dreamland. So for context, the residency has been designed to create novel interfaces for human and non-human interactions in urban environments. We have it's a very special guest with us today, and there is some very strong association with urban environments and her practice. And when it comes to her practice, either you'll find her in the mangroves or in the mountains or in the zoo or somewhere in between. So, and one of the things that makes her special for the residency is that she documented one of the most important works based on the lives of an architect who was shot dead in Karachi because of various reasons, the kind of urban complexities she was trying to document and she was trying to address. And that is by far the most influential document in the form of documentary that exists. Besides that, she's been covering non-human lives, marine life, and other forms of interventions in various public environments. And she has been the co-founder of PAWS, Pakistan Animal Welfare Association for Animals. That's right, Myra?
Pakistan Animal Welfare Society.
So, and currently she's busy with a very special work. She's been trying to focus on this Himalayan bear caged in Karachi Zoo for quite a long time, and she's making sure that the bear reaches back to its original destination. So thank you very much, Myra, for joining us. We have with us Usman, who is artistic director of the residency, very special collaborator, friend. Along with him is Ling. Ling has been very interested in non-human forms. But what connects this residency and our guest speaker is that Usman and Ling, they've been very focused on rewilding, which has been one of your favorite subjects as well lately. So over to you, Myra, and let's hear from you what you've been up to.
No, thank you, Taki, for your very warm welcome. It's lovely to be here and meet all of you guys. You mentioned the bear, and you know, the bear has been on my mind. So inside Karachi Zoo, I just want to mention, because that is what I'm up to, and you know, a few other things as well. But there's a Himalayan brown bear inside Karachi Zoo, which is the largest zoo in the country, probably. And a few of us concerned citizens and animal lovers would like to see this bear removed from the zoo and sent upcountry to a bear sanctuary, where there are already 60-70 rescued bears in an open natural space, and they're looked after like very, very well. And a Himalayan brown bear does not belong in Karachi. So about two days ago, we had this silent art protest. We weren't allowed in the zoo, but Taki joined us. Also later, we kind of snuck in from another gate, and we managed to successfully hold that protest. All we were doing was drawing, using art to create awareness. And the mayor of the city joined us as well, somehow, a bit later. And I have to meet him in the next few days. And really, I don't know, just somehow convince him to just let the bear go and do this kind deed. Now, it's interesting, Taki, that you mentioned rewilding, because literally, like, we want to help animals, but we're going to use this opportunity of this meeting with the mayor to establish a relationship with him and suggest to him the idea of rewilding Karachi's parks. So we have a few parks in the city. Karachi, as you know, is an arid scrubland by the sea. So we have got a coastal ecosystem, and it's not particularly very green. If you look at it from, if you have a look at Google Maps. Rewilding has been on my mind because I'm very interested in nature in the city, and I've visited a few cities elsewhere in the world, and they seem to be all about trying to make their spaces more livable. And one of that is to connect the residents with nature, you know, have access to nature, pockets of, quiet green spaces. And that is something that we really miss here in Karachi, because what it could be, I mean, here we've got an ecological tidiness disorder where all our parks, then our parks are pretty small. They're overly manicured and there's not much shade, and it's a very hot city, and increasingly due to the urban heat island effect. So I don't think such a thing is on the minds of our authorities, but we will plant this idea of at least trying to rewild and creating like wilder spaces, wilder parks, with like these meandering trails, where you feel like you were in this, you know, urban forest, because it's a space not just for, you know, us humans, but other sentient beings also share the city with us. And in fact, I was just wondering if I could invite a friend to this talk, because tomorrow we are going to go walk in a park, and we will exactly be talking about all of this stuff, creating imaginary trails through parks in our head. And then we hope that one day it actually happens.
Sure. Please feel free to invite your friend. It's perfectly all right.
So maybe email her the link and then see if she can join. Because, you know, if we are artists or like filmmakers or like writers, people are trying to create awareness and through their work, highlight some of these things. But then like ordinary concerned citizens who may also be artists and, you know, have these hobbies or think about rewilding or having like a kinder city. But they feel helpless, you know, like how can you make a difference for the city? It's one thing if you have good practices like in your home, in your garden, but what about our streets, our neighborhoods? Please ask something.
Okay. So it's going to be a very interactive. So you'd like to be the session to be interactive.
Yeah.
So please, everyone, please feel free to ask anything you'd like to ask about Mayra's practice, what has been her experience with Karachi, and what makes Karachi so different from other cities that she mentioned in terms of its complexity. So my question with Mayra, let me just start off with the first one. That Mayra, you know, you have covered Parveen Rehman's story in so much detail. And having seen the complexity and the politics that surround reclamation and so many other aspects that surround it, so what has been your experience in all this while, you know, covering, featuring, and actually observing all of this, what's been happening to the city?
Now how do I forward the link? One second. Sorry, I'll get back to Zoom. So I had made this documentary a few years ago about Pakistani architect Parveen Rehman. Although it's a film about an architect and her work, it's very much a film about Karachi. And people would call her the mother of Karachi. And any student in particular, if they had a project or wanted to research the sewage system of Karachi or the mapping of any neighborhood, they would really be going to her to figure out, you know, how to proceed and for information. So, I wanted to make a film with her. So I had been meeting her and talking to her about perhaps making a film about Karachi's sewage system and how the natural drains work, because in Karachi, because of haphazard development and, you know, this great increase in population after 1947, basically what Parveen found through her mapping, that all the city sewage is not being treated or going in the sewage drains, but it's actually going to the natural drains, which are spaces for when it rains, there are, you could say, almost like flash floods. And the water comes from a distance also, from the hills near the city. But now all those natural drains are choked with sewage. And so the streets turn into rivers. And it's all very complex and it's very, very interesting. And increasingly, Karachi has been flooding more and more after the rains. But unfortunately, instead of going on adventures with her to the city and, you know, trying to figure out how the city functions, I had to end up making a film about her after her death. That's how the film came to be. It is online. It's on YouTube. And after watching the film, you can get a good understanding of the city, its natural spaces, its built spaces, and how she worked with communities. And it was because of how she was, her personality, her nature, she was able to really connect with people. And really, that is something when, if you go to the neighborhoods of Orangi, which is the area where she did most of her work, you know, people talk about her very warmly. And I don't think there's anyone like her in the city. I mean, she was really one of a kind. And so after discovering all that she worked on, you know, one gets a real sense of loss, because it's a real loss for the city. She should have been like the mayor of this city. Then, you know, you would have seen a lot of good things happen in the city. Here, it's not easy to initiate or carry out any good projects. It's always a struggle. So yeah, that was a film that I made a few years ago. And Parveen also loved nature and birds and animals, and I've put that in the film as well. And currently, you know, just this evening I was thinking, winter is coming up, Karachi's weather is really nice. It will be nice in the next coming months, that I want to just use those months to film my next documentary, which is about nature in the city. So it's about all these little pockets of nature, and you know, it's like the life that you don't really see or notice, because it's a big city, and you know, and we're busy with our lives, but we try to find, we try to enjoy the spaces around us, however small, where you can connect with nature. So, anyways.
Thank you, Myra. Just for context, yeah, it's been almost a year. Something happened with the elephant there, and you've been watching that closely, and you've been involved in how the elephant lost its life.
Yeah, there's the whole elephant thing as well. We went to court for that, to try and get the international veterinarians to come and do an independent health assessment. So that's been going on for like 2 years. Then the poor elephant died, and the zoo is responsible for that. So yeah, the elephant story is a long story, but the mayor is not signing an MOU with the international NGO just because he put some terms and conditions, and he, you know, he's just not signing it. So therefore, the elephant is still in the zoo. She has to be shifted. So that's what I was saying. It's not easy to get something done, because it's not like, oh, why don't you go help the bear? Just take her to the sanctuary. Well, you don't own the bear. They own the bear, like they'd own a car or a motorcycle. So how are you going to get it out from them? But we will, because the bear is not theirs. So yeah, it's these things. How do you make people care for like a little crab that lives on Sea View Beach, or the sand dunes that don't form because they keep using tractors to like annihilate the dunes? You know, we imagine now they've built a garden at Sea View. It's such a mess, but imagine exactly where the grass is and that stupid grass garden that they put over there, that is a habitat for these white ghost crabs. And so if you let, like, you could see that after COVID, if you let the sand dunes form, and then you'll have all the beach grasses and creepers and all this coastal vegetation on the sand dunes. And then you will see, I can take you to like one sand dune area where there's like hundreds of crabs that are like this big, and they you know, they burrow in, and then they leave little like piles of sand, and you can see them from like here to there in the distance. They also live in the city. They are also Karachiites, but we just trample over their habitat. We use these tractors to like constantly rake the sand. So there is absolutely no sensitivity. And then you have those dune buggies, which we should not have any dune buggies. They should be banned. They should be on the other side of the road, but not on the sand, on the beach, polluting the beach, making noise, dangerous for people. People drive them like maniacs. We asked some people and they said, yes, always people are having accidents. And they're trampling over the little like marine snails. Or you put up this little crab video. Do you know how big that crab was that's sort of burrowing in the sand? Like about maybe 1 centimeter, less than a centimeter. That small. So like, I don't know, like I'm drawn to these critters that they're in the city. And so that's also my next documentary. It's about nature in the city and all of these, you know, maybe like to try and show a delightful side of the city. Because the images that we are normally exposed to, it's just, you know, the usual. But there are a few like delightful things if you look for them. So it's, I hope to be able to document and like capture those like snippets of conversations that people have. Like, you know, some people don't like yellow flowers falling on their white car because it totally messes up their car. And then, so they need to chop the tree that's making the yellow flowers. And like, even if that tree is like 80 years old. So you can go and argue with those people. But I find it hard to argue. I have to read that book, How to Win Arguments. Essay, you know, there's a book like that. Because one guy, like just our neighbor, like it's, I can see the tree from my window. This fabulous tree where I've seen like 50, 60 purple sunbirds on it when it flowers. It's a Lebec tree. But they chopped down like 80% of the tree. So only 20% is left, like chopped, hacked it. I filmed it from my house. And I've made many small like bird watching wali videos. They're on my like Instagram or Twitter account. A bunch of random stuff is there if you scroll through it. So then I said, you know, like, how can you say okay, don't like do it? They've already done it. And then, but I did say to one guy, and he said, "Saab, kitni mehengi mehengi gaadiyan hain." So, you know, like he said, I have to translate that, right? That he said, "The how do you say Saab in English?" Master.
The gentleman has such an expensive car.
House owner, the gentleman. The house owner,
yeah.
Do you know how like how many expensive cars he has parked under that tree? Therefore, we must chop this tree that I've been seeing for like 30 years or something. And then you're like, yeah, makes perfect sense. You know, please go ahead, chop the tree down. So that tree was right in front of my house, you know, across the street. So my grief at things that go wrong in the city like starts like right here from when I'm sitting at home, because I know what that, how important that tree was. That tree was home to like parrots and, you know, kites, and now it's just not there. There are like two branches. So main kitna afsos karun us pe, like how much can I feel sad about that? Or about the bear that is like a 45-minute drive from my house. So I don't know. I think if you can make a difference for like even one life, then you've like helped all of mankind. That's what they say. So I think you do what you can, because it's hard to not speak up. But for the trees, you can't speak up because, you know, they... It's in fact, I think trees would feature heavily in this documentary, or I make a separate one about trees in the city, because the people of Karachi hate trees, especially if they give any shade, because they also make, so I want to make like this funny documentary on just people, because, you know, these are the conversations I have when we walk in the neighborhood or when I talk with friends and they tell these stories. And so I've come to the conclusion, okay, imagine a funny documentary where people are really getting worked up about trees and stories around like trees, and actually showing them like this awful, god awful date palm. We have a little neighborhood park, and someone's plonked like 3 grown date palms. It's been like a year. They're very much dead, but they're still there, sticking out like sore thumbs. And I hate that park, but you know, I go there. It was a park made by neighbors, people in the neighborhood. But I started it, but they threw me out because it was going to be a bit wild. So it was kind of wild park, but people can't stand that. So if you even try to do something for your community, like increase the biodiversity, plant native, like isme to kaante hain, this tree has thorns. This tree is in the middle. This doesn't, you know, like look good, but they'll plonk the date palms that they've spent, I don't know, 40,000 rupees on. And then a friend of mine who's a gardener from California, she was visiting and she would have her evening tea there. And eventually she's also started getting bothered by all the wrong gardening practices, like this highly overly manicured park with 3 dead date palms. So she asked some random person who happened to be standing there, who couldn't care less, but she asked him, well, why have you planted these, you know, like these date palms, and they're also dead now? And the guy, I mean, they look dead. And the guy's like, he didn't plant them. He's like, no, they're not dead. And then they had this whole argument about, he's like, never in my life have I ever seen a dead date palm. I'm like, this city is full of dead date palms. And then my friend was arguing. It was so funny because I told my friend later, okay, he didn't plant them. He doesn't even know. He probably didn't even know there's a tree behind him that's dead. So I think these conversations are like so funny, and I like to document things. So I have to start doing that this winter, because I love those, like, as irksome as those arguments would be, but like for me it's like material, like it's a fantastic material to just document, even just the audio.
Thank you, Myra. I think Sunila has a question, and thank you, Link, for this fantastic link regarding this tree and the mourning that surrounds this tree. Can you say a few things about this, Link? Because while we are on the topic of trees.
Yeah, no, it's just in the recent news lately, I think in north of England, there's this tree that was in part of the nature reserve area. And it was, turns out it was a 16-year-old boy who cut the tree away. And it caused a huge nationwide outcry about this vandalism, just of a single tree. So it's, I mean, just interesting if you think about the balance between just how much people care about things, but it's always that it is in the view of someone that, you know, also it has to be in the view of the right people, in the sense this is a middle, you know, working class white British people's interests. So they kind of raise a lot of, you know, backlash about this, and this causes nationwide news about it. So, I mean, just in reaction to what you were saying about just how people are not paying attention to this, but it's really about who are the ones that's paying attention to it. And sometimes just even one single person, like the mayor who saw this and they say something, it can cause an outcry nationwide. So it's sad that this is not being given more attention to, but as what you were saying. But yeah, I think just on the other hand, in England, that's what's happening now.
Yeah, I think on Twitter I follow up to like 200 English biodiversity accounts. So when I scroll through Twitter, I have to really search for any Pakistani news because it's all about the biodiversity depletion in England. Or there's an account that's called Shit Lawns where they're just constantly, how do you say in Urdu, koft kar rahe hote hain, like getting all hot and bothered about like the lawns which are an ecological desert. So yeah, but I think I don't know what Sunila had asked.
I haven't asked yet. Thank you, Mahira, for talking to us today. And I have seen the movie on Parveen. I happen to have worked with her also. I'm an architect myself, so she was a teacher, mentor for me as well. And truly, it's a great loss that we don't have her. But, you know, I keep thinking that we have so many initiatives on very small scale across the city. Like Parveen was, as you said, the mother of Karachi. But a lot of youngsters, a lot of other people have these little initiatives. Like there is Shahzad Qureshi, there is Tariq Alexander Kesar, there is, you know, there are these different people doing their neighborhoods, parks. Even I'm at IBS and a lot of my students do their thesis and projects around documenting some of the nature across Karachi. But they always, so I actually wonder, like Arif Hassan is there as well, that why don't we come together more stronger as a united front? Because you are doing a lot of wonderful work and Zain is also there with you, who is also by the way, a teacher of mine. Zain Mustafa. So I just wonder that why don't we come together as a more stronger force and then what, you know, create more pressure? Because individually, when everybody is doing a lot of work and then it doesn't turn out to be the way one kind of wants it, then eventually the effort or the enthusiasm does die out, especially for the youngsters. So I also feel that a lot of my students come to me asking for platforms where through which they can actually reach out and make a difference. So there is kind of a vacuum there as well. So your thoughts on how we can come together on a much stronger front? And the other thing I keep wondering about is that what about, you know, inculcating these ideas, these thoughts in our curriculum for school children? Because that is where we need to create more awareness and more connections. And also things like Indus Valley has this program called the Continuing Education Program, which is basically for adults and, you know, who are working, have a professional career, and they just want to up their knowledge about a certain specific field. So they offer a lot of short courses. It can be a workshop, it can be a, you know, a week-long workshop, a weekend workshop. So things like that, where you actually reach out to a larger community and create that sort of a platform and connection.
Absolutely. That's something that one of the students today mentioned to me when she heard that many people didn't join the event at the zoo, for example. And she was like, why don't you work with other people who are doing the same thing? And then maybe then you have like a bigger voice, like your message has more of an audience. But the thing is, everybody is just doing their own thing in their own way. And it's hard to find like-minded people with which to collaborate on anything. Like, for example, in our neighborhood, we were just trying to green a little space. But just for that, people have different ideas. I mean, they literally threw me out of that park because they couldn't stand me. And if I was planting like a badam, then they would have paid the on. Like, they got rid of every single thing I had planted over there because they want to plant something else. So, and you know, so I was very disheartened after that because all your hard work and energy has just basically gone to waste. Now, I recently had a gardening friend visit from the US, and she was staying in our neighborhood. And she was just talking about, you know, she's an expert at composting. And she was surprised that, let's say, the neighborhood where I live in, nobody composts. Maybe if one or two people do, we don't know about it. But back in the old days, people would make their own compost. And also, like, the grass clippings can be made use of. She to says that you just leave them. And she was trying to convince this gardener, Mali, ke why this was on the street, you know, outside the boundary wall. Why don't you just leave the grass clippings? You know, this is gold. And he's like, whoa, you know, it looks messy. He can't do that. And in fact, we were walking on the street and she saw some grass clippings. And so she picked them up and she just spread them out over the cut grass. And I said, you know, you come here tomorrow and it won't be there. And she was spent all this energy explaining to someone. So I think the kind of ideas that we have, or the way we think, unless a bunch of people think like that and get together and are doing a project, it, you know, here, anything that comes to, let's say, gardening or greening, people have such different ideas and we are outnumbered. That how do you, it's, you know, it's something that we're still trying to figure out. It's like, but, you know, you can start from your own home and outside your home or in your neighborhood. I mean, I've tried. Now I don't do anything in my neighborhood because, like, someone said, you know, a friend was saying, I said, look, here's this tree growing on the roadside. Why don't we protect it? Like, put some rocks around it, like, make a little, like, circle so that this twig is protected. And, but he's like, you know, the more you just let it be, because the moment someone sees that you're trying to take care of it or you protected it, they will absolutely just run a bulldozer over it and annihilate it. So I thought I'm so, like, what we do is like guerrilla gardening, or we try to like rescue plants, or there's like a neem tree growing in the middle of an empty plot, which was literally like a twig this big. So then we put rocks around it and we, now it's like, you know, 4 feet tall. And I know when they build a house, the tree will be gone, but we were able to like save it. And we keep putting some brown material on it to keep it cool. But I think we're just afraid to do anything because they will, we tried to make a hugelkultur mound and a few days later it was like just bulldozed and knocked to one side on one of the empty plots. So a lot can be done, but unfortunately here the neighbors are, I feel, very antagonistic. And even though they all may be on a WhatsApp group now after COVID, but they're always like fighting with each other also. And I've spent a lot of time and energy doing things for my neighborhood. But it's, I don't know, if you figure it out, let me know who can work together on what. And I think people who manage to do that, so I have the good fortune to have been able to venture into the mangrove forest off the coast of Karachi. So I'm a bit familiar with the environment and all the, you know, the forest ecosystem and how it's so precious. And you know how they say the coastal communities are the original inhabitants of Karachi.
Yeah.
And what we have done to them as a city, we have marginalized them, and their living space, we have made it full of toxic pollution. And so their very livelihood is, I mean, they're swimming in those waters. They have all sorts of skin issues. The pollutants are being absorbed through their skin, the fish that they're eating. Usually, though, they're often consuming what they call the kachra fish, the garbage fish. Yeah. It's also fed to poultry and like water that you wouldn't dip your finger in. or your foot in, and they are living in that water and exposed to it. So ek to their environment is a very it's sad to like see that. My friend Munira would like to say a few words about your project. So Munira and I have been discussing rewilding Karachi's, you know, parks, or some of them. And also we've gone to the mangroves together. Munira, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here, listening to everyone.
Hi, Munira.
We would love to hear your thoughts on the public art project that has been initiated by Sunila. And also, Munira is also like an artist. And
I've just... you know, as Mahira said, we've ventured into the mangroves together, and it was a really amazing experience because, first of all, the existence of these islands, it's eye-opening. It's a whole different world out there. It's mud, it's crabs, it's snails, it's camels, it's mangroves. And it's like an other world. It's otherworldly being there. And it's definitely something that's part of our landscape. It's Karachi we're talking about. And but also eye-opening because, you know, as Sunila said, you know, people are part of this ecosystem. People are part of this natural environment. They are so ill-equipped to deal with the ecological disasters that are unfolding as we speak. So that's that was my observation in the mangroves on Bundal Island and all the surrounding islands.
So we have 9 islands surrounding Karachi, and we never in terms of the master planning and the the strategic plans for Karachi, they are never talked about, and they are never looked at. We never look at Karachi from that vantage point, from those 9 islands being a part of Karachi. So, which is quite tragic because there is a very big fishing community that relies on it, who are actually the original inhabitants of Karachi, as Myra said. So I just feel there is a lot of awareness that needs to be created, and civil society should take it up as something, as a project.
Yeah,
go on, Myra.
And I was just going to say it's interesting that you mentioned that there are 9 islands surrounding Karachi that are very much a part of Karachi. They're in Karachi. So sometimes, you know, when I'm sharing or writing something about the mangroves or one of our ventures into one of these, you know, mudflat islands, and then I always pause to think for a moment. So I went today to this creek. So there's all these creeks around the islands, and we try to go and explore that. Like there's one called Barchan Creek. And then when I'm writing the description, I pause to think that Barchan Creek, which is off the coast of Karachi, like is it outside Karachi? Is it in Karachi? But then I think it's only a few people are going there. It's not so easy to go there. I mean, the fishing community, they go there, but like we are very disconnected from the sea. So then you're like, is it in Karachi? But here's Karachi, but so this is outside Karachi, but it is also Karachi, but it's a Karachi that at least nobody in my social circle like sees, my friends and family. Because how often does anyone go to the mangroves to experience them? I mean, our government should offer, like, that he's worked on one of the islands and done some amazing work, but our government, like, I don't know, where is the Sindh Forest Department? They should be offering low cost like eco tours, you know, or there should be like some way that people can venture safely into the mangroves. So yeah, are they inside Karachi? Are they outside? It's, yeah.
I'm a bit wary of tourism, Vete.
Yeah, no, like, so am I.
Control tourism. If the Sindh Forest were to offer regular tours, maybe just even two a month, and people sign up for them, and so done in a manner. Like,
because our public is kind of the picnicking sort, you know? I mean, nothing against picnics, of course, but we do leave a trail of trash behind, and there's no concept of leaving a place better than you found it.
Yeah, that is a concern. Anywhere that tourists are able to venture doesn't really turn out very well.
Usman has been silently listening to the conversation. But it seems that there's been quite a lot of dichotomy of how, just like what Ling mentioned, that there was one tree, and the moment it was cut down, there was such a huge uproar. And here, you know, there are islands after islands are really get done away with, but nobody talks about it. So Usman, what are your thoughts on this dichotomy?
Well, many, many thoughts, of course. I think that what I find interesting as a practitioner in the space is that, as an architect, as a designer, and also as an artist, is that the fundamental challenge of the 21st century is figuring out how we are going to do stuff together, even when we don't all agree, how to collaborate without consensus. And I think that particularly when it comes to nature and cities, what's really interesting, and this is stuff I uncovered when I was doing the Rewild project for East London. I actually pasted in some references that were really key to me from Dr. Bridget Snaith. In particular, what's really interesting to me is just that, you know, from a particular perspective, from a particular, let's say, educated middle class perspective, the idea of nature and cities sort of makes sense, you know. And if you look at it from even the scientific and even from the perspective of how are we humans going to survive this century, which needs all sorts of things, and we need to re-examine our approach to how we interact with the non-human natural world, we need to really improve biodiversity and all these things, all of that makes sense to increase nature in cities. But as everyone's kind of been referring to, we don't all agree on this, actually, when we look at it, because people from different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, the evidence that Dr. Snaith has assembled is, you know, people from different ethnicities have a very different take on this. So the classic example in London, I don't know if this is similar in Karachi, it'd be very interesting to hear about this, but classic example in London is the wild meadow. You know, let's introduce a wild meadow into a park or into you know, some bit of public space. If you're white and middle class, that sounds great. You know, a bit of nature in the city, you know, how lovely to see, you know, there'll be increase of biodiversity. Let's stop mowing the lawns as well, because that's been shown to increase biodiversity, et cetera, et cetera. But from a very different perspective, that is a sudden loss of a resource, a green field, a place where the kids were playing, a place to walk the dog, perhaps, or, you know, somewhere where sports activity took place, because, you know, it can no longer be used for those. And that's an actual loss for someone. That, now, somehow those things need to be reconciled. And I think that's why, just coming back to my initial point, I think that is kind of the fundamental design challenge. It's not,
what was perhaps a 20th century model, which was form follows function. How are we going to design this structure? How are we going to design these details? I think 21st century is how are we going to design the interactions between people and actually also non-humans that are not necessarily on the same page. And just to mention, Ling and I had done this project, very, very quick project, a couple of weeks ago, which might tickle you a bit, on the topic of trees. We've been doing a series of projects trying to give a voice to trees so that they could talk back to us. And we kind of put together a citizen assembly where the trees could make decisions about the climate emergency. It turned out they really weren't that happy with us either. So, humans might not be in Karachi happy with trees in certain circumstances. The trees themselves have personalities, characteristics, idiosyncrasies, and they are pretty pissed off themselves.
I bet.
Yeah. Thank you for these thoughts, Usman. But Usman and Ling would be visiting Karachi in coming weeks. So it'd be great to catch up with Myra and Munira as well. But thank you for wonderful overview, Myra. Myra, just one of the last questions that, because what Sunila was mentioning, that the school was set up by Navy, but all of these areas are highly politicized. And, there are people with, of course, the community is like one of the strands, but around the community, you've got KPT, you've got, Coast Guards, you've got other power structures at play. So how you've been juggling with it and what has been your strategy so far?
When I heard who set up the school, I was like, well, no wonder there's not a single tree there. Because communities themselves, if it were up to them, then like you see that here in lower income areas as well, that they will have that badam tree, just outside their home, or at least some plants that they're looking after, because it is it comes naturally to people when they own the space, and when it's their own space, they try to enhance it in any way, whether that's leaving water out for birds or looking after the one tree or tomato plant or something. But when people feel sort of helpless or like they don't have much of a say, then I think the environment also suffers. As in like where I live, what you would call the municipal authority or whoever is in charge of the place, if I'm like, I want more trees in my neighborhood because I want the parrots to come back and a variety of like small birds, but I know that any tree I plant, they are more likely to rip it out. Someone mentioned compassion, trying to like increase compassion. That's also in the mission statement of my animal welfare society that I set up in 2004. It says we aim to like create compassion between, the country's human and non-human residents. I've not really seen, it's a struggle to urge people to be compassionate towards anything or like any cause or nature. But what I was saying was, yeah, where I live, I was just talking to Munira about it, I think some moments ago, around 5 or 6 in the evening, when several people are out, like elderly men, women, children, just doing their evening walk in the neighborhood, that is when the municipal authority's spray machine comes. So it's like a small pickup truck with a fog machine, and they're spraying like these absolutely toxic, poisonous chemicals just so that they can commission the buying of these chemicals. And, it's a cycle. It's not really to kill the mosquitoes so you don't get malaria or dengue. It's not out of the goodness of their heart. It's a thing, and they'll spray it in our faces. So sometimes if I'm out in the evening and walking or like with my dog, and I see like little children also like running around, we see this pickup truck coming and we direction and go back home and go indoors. And then, so how can you expect such people? I mean, so there's then, you know, people feel helpless there and they don't really take part in making their environment better or caring about these things. I forget what the question
politics,
was.
The politics of it, that KPT, Navy, yeah. The layers. So have you been struggling with all of these layers or how you've been dealing with it?
Well, we've taken a couple of these authorities to court. So there's one, there's a beach near the city. It's called Seaview Beach. And a private housing society is in charge of it. We've taken them to court as well for the dumping of raw sewage and whatnot. And that case is still ongoing. The entire city's sewage is not treated. But they've made one treatment plant, which is in a building as big as a McDonald's. And they're saying now everything is being treated in the Char Diwari. So yeah, it's you can go to court if you want to put your life on the line, or you can speak up about it. I think, I don't know, it's hard to like make a difference, but you know, still you keep trying because hope makes the world go round. Like, we are hopeful we'll get the bear out this month. Hopes.
That's quite a hopeful note to end things on. But thank you very much, Myra, and everyone else who's joined us. And looking forward to catching up with you once Usman and Ling are there. And I hope all goes well with the bear and your other projects, especially upcoming documentary as well. So we'll keep you posted with the developments as well as the projects unfold. But once again, thank you very much for taking time out. And Munira, for on such a short notice, actually making it to the session. So thank you, everyone. We'll catch up soon.